It Takes Two, Amy Eiler, J.J. Gordon, the vet is in on KFGO. Dr. Doreen Winning from Valley Vet on Main Avenue joins us back in studio. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me back.
We just asked, is spring a busy time for people to be bringing their pets in?
It's starting to pick up. We're starting to get just going with a lot of people come in for their, you know, people get puppies this time of year. And so we have
it's easier to train outside now that the snow is, well, we didn't really have any snow this year, but yeah, usually.
Well, it's the time of year. And so we get a lot of vaccines that are coming in, annual vaccines, annual visits this time of year, just because it's, you know, it's people's time where they start thinking about puppies. So it just corresponds every year.
Sure, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about this. Are there diseases that household pets can share, even though they're different species? So, like, if you have a cat and a dog, are there diseases that can go back and forth between these two animals?
So, for the most part, I'm trying to think of things. You know, people always ask ear infections. Okay, so can my dog spread ear infection to my cat or even other dogs? And typically not, no, unless it's ear mites. And very rarely do we see ear mites. Most people just jump to the conclusion that their dog has ear mites when there's an ear infection, but typically it's not. It's usually yeast that grows in the ears specifically. So other diseases that are can jump species would be things like, you know, external parasites, fleas.
Okay.
Some sorts of lice. So those things. Let's see. That's probably about it. Okay. You know, I was just reading a story on avian influenza because we know avian influenza has now jumped species to cattle. And there have been some cases, especially over in Europe, where cats have picked up the HPAI, highly pathogenic avian influenza. So, I mean, there's things like that, but for the most part, pathogens tend to be fairly species specific.
Okay. I mean, that's kind of the answer you want to hear, right?
Right.
So that you don't have to worry about kennel cough in your dog and then
transmitting to your cat.
Right.
And again, there are certain exceptions to that. Kennel cough complex, things like Bordetella can be transmitted, but for the most part, again, it's fairly species specific.
Okay. Something that I know that you've dealt with is traveling with pets.
Right.
I just read about how the company that does BarkBox has launched an airline now.
Nice.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it's spendy.
Yeah.
But, like, it is ultra luxury for your pet. I think it can only accommodate, like, 15 pets and 15 owners, but then there's 10 extra seats that you can buy.
And
they go with. They lay it out. I mean, very expensive, but for those people, they've got some that go between, like, Paris and New York.
Wow.
And so I have friends who just, in fact, it was a pretty horrific story. They were moving to Ireland, and she sustained a major injury like 2 days before they were going to leave. And the doctor said, I think we should probably keep you from, you know, going that. And she goes, no, my cats are on this international flight. There's no way we can reschedule that. What is it like to travel with pets in cases where maybe you are flying across the globe or you've got to get from point A to point B and driving isn't an option?
Mm-hmm. So international travel is a completely different ballgame than travel, airline travel through the United States. And international travel can be kind of nerve-wracking, especially you mentioned Ireland. Any place that is an island tends to be more difficult to get pets into. So as you know, last fall I went to Romania and picked up a puppy there. And the first thing I'll say is that, you know, usually when I travel, I try to have a nice, leisurely, relaxing trip. And when you're traveling with a pet, there's anxiety there. It'd be like traveling with your kids. And you can't always control when they're going to be barking or meowing or fussing or whatever. You can't always control if they have an accident in their kennels or crates, especially if they're, you know, on board with the rest of the passengers under the seat. So it can be very stressful. So that's why it's always important to have everything lined up and ready to go well in advance of that visit or of that trip. And so getting in contact with your veterinarian to help determine what requirements are there for entry into the country Sometimes there are quarantine requirements. Sometimes there are certain vaccine and parasite preventions that are requirements. So it's important to get that all lined up. In Europe, when we traveled with our little Reese, she had to have a European pet passport. And so that had all her documentation in there as we moved from country to country throughout Europe.
And I imagine, too, the devil's in the details, right? Mm-hmm. And a single missing vaccination or piece of information.
Yeah, you're stuck. And ooh, that is not the time to be, you know, trying to find a vet or, you know, having your pet quarantined and you're not able to access it. I mean, those are some serious things that can happen as consequences of not being completely prepared.
Now, what about domestic travel within the United States? Because I seem to notice it more and more as I'm on flights, people bringing a small dog and cat along.
Yeah, again, I would contact your veterinarian because sometimes there are health certificate requirements. Not always, but many times there are. And so if you need a health certificate, that has to be filled out by a veterinarian so many days in advance of your trip. And so having that and thinking about things like medications for your pet, making sure you have those supplies with. Sometimes even, and we've talked about this in the past, sometimes even pets don't want to drink the tap water that's in certain locations. And so making sure that you're carrying even just like a supply of water for your pet as much as you are able, or getting your pet used to having bottled water.
Are there anything like over-the-counter, like sedation at all that you can get if you're traveling with a pet?
Honestly, I haven't found any over-the-counter sedative options. Like sometimes in the past we've talked about, okay, will Benadryl help? I've had that question a lot from clients. And typically for stressful trips like that where things are really out of the normal for the pet, I have found that just over-the-counter remedies for sedation just don't seem to cut it. So again, talking to your veterinarian about, okay, is there a certain prescription medication I need for sedation because I'm concerned that, you know, Fido or Fluffy is going to be very anxious during the trip.
We've got some texts here.
Yeah, we do. And cat-related, how can a person trim a cat's sharp nails at home?
I do it just with a nail trimmer.
Really?
Or with a dog nail trimmer. You can get smaller sized ones. And yeah, you can just trim them. Some cats don't tolerate it. Sometimes they end up coming in to us.
I was like, depending on the cat. I mean, you know, at your own risk at this point, depending on your cat. You know your cat the best.
It can be hard. You know, cats, they can do some damage with those claws if you're trying to trim them and they don't think that's quite appropriate. So sometimes I will send home sedative medications so that owners can do nail trims at home. I have no problem with that with my clients. Just trying to make it as stress-free as possible for both the pet and the owner.
Yeah. This person also asked about Red Dot. I know you're not a fan of Red Dot, but my cat begs to play every night.
Yeah, and we can talk about that again. The we're talking about laser pointers, and the reason I'm not a fan of laser pointers is simply because they can never get rewarded by catching that dot. It's completely elusive, and some animals will just get so frustrated with that, it contributes to their level of anxiety. So it hasn't been a favorite of mine, but I know a lot of cat owners do it. It's just something to try and get exercise for their cats, and I get that.
And maybe if you give them a little treat at the end, it makes it a little bit better.
Or even better yet, a toy.
A toy, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, good point. The Vet is in here on KFGO. Let's get to the phone lines here. Fred is up first. Fred, you have a question for Dr. Winning. Go ahead.
Yes, I do. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning.
The question I have is, my daughter has a small American Eskimo, and she takes it to a daycare center during the day when she works. And apparently, someone there working at the daycare center told her that the dog has a cracked molar or wisdom tooth or whatever, whichever kind of a tooth it is in the back, you know, and that it should be pulled. So she's got an appointment next Monday to some facility where the dog has to be sedated and have the tooth pulled. Is that normal? Is that something? Is it legitimate? I guess it's
yeah. So let's talk about that, because dogs can quite often break teeth on things that they, some dogs chew on things that are too hard for their teeth and they break them, and they'll either get slab fractures or they'll just break the crown off. And in those circumstances, you've got a couple of options depending on the type of tooth it is and how deep the break goes, as far as is the whole crown broken off or not. You can consider, and this happened to my dog, and I called a veterinary dentist about this. I wanted to have my dog, she broke off one of the back teeth. It's a major prehensile or chewing tooth. And so I thought, oh, we're going to get a root canal. So we're going to try to save this tooth. And her response to me is, why bother? So if that tooth has been fractured and we do a root canal on that tooth, it's going to get very brittle and your dog is going to break it even easier the second time around. So you do have the option many times of getting root canal done. But the best thing is very often to just take the tooth out and be done with it. So I agree. I think that, you know, depending on the fracture type, if it's entering into the pulp chamber or there is a red dot on the tooth where the nerve and blood supply to the tooth are, there's no point in trying to save that tooth. It's best to just get it out, because bacteria go up into that pulp chamber and they set up in the very tip of the root. And they cause little what we call periapical abscesses, and it's painful for the dog. It's best to just get the tooth out and be done with it.
And I believe that's what my daughter said, that the concern was that pulp of the tooth would be coming out, and so yeah. So I do appreciate that. I guess a dog. I gotta tell you,
it's in good hands.
When my daughter set the appointment up, she asked to keep the tooth, because the tooth fairy might be coming for the dog. So
that's going to be an expensive tooth.
I got a feeling it is. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
The vet is in, Dr. Doreen Winning from Valley Vet. Let's get to Mary. Hello, Mary.
Good morning. Good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon.
I'm calling about a six-month-old Aussie Doodle who is... we've had her since she was a little over 2 months old. So she's, you know, basically potty trained. I mean, we do really well with that. The only time she has a little tinkle is when somebody new is around and she's so dang excited, and I expect that that'll settle down eventually. But so we never had a dog of my own before, never had a dog in the house until recently, and that dog had been trained and, you know, didn't. So I don't know anything about taking care of a dog other than feeding them and loving them and taking the burrs out of their coat. But I'd like her to not jump on me or anybody else. Mm-hmm. And I have a number of things. When are they old enough to train, seriously train? When is too much too much? How do you get them to be calm around people? Hand signals. I want her to be able to walk. I'd like to be able to take her to a nursing home because people really, really like that.
Yeah.
But maybe she's not the right dog for all of that.
They're never too young to train, and they're never too old to train. So right now is the perfect time. And what I would suggest to you, Mary, is that she go to an obedience school. And I can always tell what dogs have been to obedience school and what ones haven't, because the dogs that have been to obedience school are more focused on their owner in chaotic situations or situations where they're fearful or have a potential to be fearful. So it's important that she learn. Dog school is like controlled chaos. And so basically teaching her commands, how to listen to you in those circumstances, is only going to benefit her as her life goes on and she's exposed to more uncertain and new circumstances in her life. So first of all, go to obedience school. That's really, really important. Second of all,
I'm thinking the closest one is 100 miles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that presents a problem. You know, do what you can, but if you're thinking about taking her to nursing homes and stuff, honestly, obedience school is, I encourage you to figure out a way to make that happen, at least a couple of times just to set the basis for her training. You can
then
do...
What?
I'm sorry.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. So
I was going to ask, I think the jumping issue is something I need to try and address now, and I'm not sure what to do with that.
Yeah, and that's the second thing is the jumping issue is, especially this time of year with muddy paws, is not pleasant for anybody. And that's a behavior seek, or excuse me, an attention seeking behavior. And so for her, it's going to be, instead of even looking at her or acknowledging her, I would just turn away. Sometimes if they get too exuberant, you can just yell a good, sharp, loud no and turn away. Don't pet her. Don't make eye contact. Just get away. So that would be, you know, I've had people use positive punishment, like delivering some sort of unpleasant event associated with that. And, you know, I tend not to do that because I think it can contribute to dogs' anxiety levels with things. But you can use loud, you know, noises or whatever to get her attention and teach her something that you should be doing instead of something you shouldn't. And so that's where the training again comes in. And I would encourage you to ignore those unwanted behaviors because most often, especially jumping, it's attention-seeking behavior. And before it extinguishes, it typically gets worse.
Well, and we're both senior citizens and one is even more senior. So
well,
I think it's important. You know, it's hard to turn away quickly.
Yeah, and you don't want to lose your balance either when you're turning away.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's, and I don't want to get pushed over.
Right.
So.
And so.
All right.
Yep. I think, you know, teach her how to heel. Teach her, you know, walking on your left side, put her collar on, get her on a lead, walk her on your left side, teach her how to heel. Teach her sits, teach her stays, all those things. But if you can, you know, even a couple times a month, swing an obedience class, maybe something that's on in a bigger town during the day so that you can attend it without having to drive at night. That would be ideal.
I don't worry about the driving at night. It's the distance.
Yeah.
She gets car sick.
Uh-huh. And sometimes they can grow out of that.
Well, I hope so because she's 6 months old and she puked the last time we took her to the vet. So that's not happy. Anyhow, so when you talk about heel on the left, she kind of managed. I was had her on a. Is a short leash the best?
I would say so. Yes. Keep in mind, dogs live in a black and white world. They don't live in a shades of gray world where it's okay this time, or you know maybe a little of that is okay. It's either black or white. It's yes or no. So either that behavior is acceptable, or it's not.
Yeah.
Under any circumstances.
You know, it's 2024 too. I mean, I know we had a trainer come to our home.
Mm-hmm.
You can probably find something online. I don't know. There are a lot of options, I would assume,
yeah,
at this phase. But yeah, I mean, obedience training is just the best thing to do.
Well, and especially if you're going to take them, and a lot of people, when they take their pets to nursing homes or, you know, places where they're kids or whatever to be, quote, therapy dogs, you want to get a canine good citizen.
Yeah.
You know, and that is a lot of training and testing,
mm-hmm,
associated with that.
Yeah.
So think about that too.
Yeah. Okay. Janine is up next here.
Hello. Yes. I have a dog. It's a German wire-haired pointer. She'll be 2 in July. She had surgery recently for eating my daughter's underwear, and it doesn't seem like she learned her lesson, so she's trying to still eat things, and we have things locked up, but is there anything that you can do to deter them from doing that if they haven't really learned their lesson?
She probably won't learn her lesson. How old did you say she is?
She'll be 2 in July.
Yeah, some of these dogs, it takes years for them to work out of that. And so making sure she's supervised and picking up is the, and doesn't have access to things that she shouldn't ingest. And I know it's hard because I've had dogs like that. I remember one time I had a new pair of Birkenstock sandals that I had just taken out of the box, and within a half hour one was completely destroyed. So I know it gets frustrating. I know it's scary, too. Sometimes the things that they ingest, sometimes they pass, sometimes they don't. So there's no solution to it other than just making sure she doesn't have access to those items.
Okay, thank you.
The Vet Is In, Dr. Doreen Winning here on KFGO. We do this once a month. It's the third Tuesday of the month from 1 to 2 o'clock here on KFGO. Okay, we have some texts coming in to 35270. Let's see. I have a three-year-old male Havanese. He reverse sneezes occasionally. How common is this, and at what point should I be concerned and take him in?
Reverse sneeze is a fairly common reflex in dogs. They are oxygenating just fine, meaning they're getting their oxygen into their lungs just fine. They're not going to expire from it. Usually it's a nasal irritant. That's the underlying cause. So it could be allergic. It could be, you know, pollens, dusts, that kind of thing. Rarely, I think once in my career, I've had it be nasal mites. So when should you intervene if you are noticing green or yellow nasal discharge, bloody nasal discharge, anything like that, or accompanied by other clinical signs like cough, green or yellow eye discharge, anything like that should be seen.
Okay. And let's see. I have two neutered male rags. What are those?
Probably rag dolls.
Oh, okay. 2 years and 7 months. I try to feed them in separate spaces, but I'm struggling. The little guy eats anything that doesn't outrun him, and now the older one only wants to eat the little one's dry kitten kibble. Is that a problem? And how worried should I be that the not so little pork chop?
What? I think they're referring to their little one as a little pork chop.
A little pork chop.
A little pork chop.
Okay, I was confused.
Because I was like, you're feeding your cat a pork chop?
I know. When I first read that, I was like, what? Okay.
So the bottom line is, how do I feed my cats separately? Bottom line. And what I would suggest is you put the food down for a period of time. Pick that period of time. If your cats are good eaters and you don't need to have the food down long, 10 minutes, let's just say. Off the top of my head. And you need to patrol. If they don't eat it, you put it up and then you offer it again at your next desired feeding time and so on and so forth. So that's the way you would train them. Probably easier than that is auto feeders. Nowadays, you can get auto feeders that have chip readers in them. So the cat wears a microchip on their neck, you know, on a collar, and it only opens for that cat. Very convenient, though they can be more expensive than regular auto feeders.
Auto feeders are the best, man. I'll sing those praises all the time. And they can feed your cat so much more often than you can.
Right. My cat cats gets, are natural grazers.
Yeah. My cat gets fed 4 times in a day. Mm-hmm. I don't have there's too many things going on. I don't have the patience to run home and feed my cat just a little tiny bit of food 4 times
sure.
a day.
4 kibbles.
Yes. Best time to neuter a male hunting golden retriever, or should I keep him intact?
Oh, I look up a study every time because I can't remember all the breeds, but I think, now let's just put this into, you know, a common sense type approach. If you have a dog that is around intact female dogs and you plan on neutering this dog and you don't know if you can keep it away from the females when they're in season, obviously neuter him sooner. But otherwise, male golden retrievers, you can wait until they're over a year of age.
Well, there you go.
Okay.
Dr. Doreen Winning, this was a busy day on the Vet Is In. Holy moly.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it. We'll see you next month.
See you next month.
The next one will be May 21st.
See you then.
Okay.